This is Akashvani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on This Week in Parliament. The participants are Ashok K. Bhattacharya, Economic Analyst, and Sandeep Phukan, Political Analyst. The moderator is Tina Jha, Journalist.
Hello, listeners of Akashvani. The Parliament passed some significant bills this week, including the Immigration and Foreigners Bill, the Banking Laws Amendment Bill, the Disaster Management Amendment Bill, the Boilers Bill, and the Tribhuvan Sahakari University Bill. Also, the Finance Bill 2025 was returned to the Lok Sabha on Thursday, along with 35 government amendments, thereby completing the 2025-26 budgetary exercise, which started on the 1st of February. The Rajya Sabha also returned the Appropriation Bill number 3 with a voice vote. To talk about what these bills encompass and the changes they seek to bring about, we have with us two distinguished guests, senior journalists, Mr. A.K. Bhattacharya and Mr. Sandeep Phukan. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Welcome to Akashvani. Mr. Bhattacharya, let's begin the program with you. First, by understanding the aims and objectives of the Banking Laws Amendment Bill, which was passed by Lok Sabha in December, but the Rajya Sabha cleared it only on the 26th of March 2020.
Well, I think it's a very important piece of legislation. It has got many aspects which directly impact the country's financial sector, as well as it affects you and me. Let me come to the way it impacts positively India's financial sector. As you know, that the cooperative banking system is a very, very critical arm of the entire banking system in the country. And there was some time ago, there was some controversy over whether the cooperative banking system should be governed by the banking laws which the Reserve Bank of India implements and influences. Now, this law amendment bill includes that a provision by which Reserve Bank of India will be able to provide the same benefits to CEO of a cooperative bank, the same tenure as it can give to any other commercial bank. It will provide greater continuity, greater stability in the cooperative banking system. Similarly, there is another provision which gives the Reserve Bank of India the power to define substantial control of any bank or cooperative bank in a more relaxed and liberalized manner. Right now, it is a few lakh rupees or 10% of the shareholding. Now, this meant that if you cross that few lakh rupees, then it becomes a substantial shareholding. Obviously, time has passed and those few lakh rupees, I think it was 5 lakh rupees, needs to be updated. So this law increases that limit of asset, equity asset in their bank to 2 crore rupees or 10%. So that's a very significant change in the law. And finally, there is a change that allows ordinary depositors like you and me to have not just one, but as many as 4 nominees. Now, it addresses a major concern of people who may not have left a will behind, but they have got not just one, maybe 3 or 4 nominees. Earlier, you could have only one nominee. Now you can have 4 nominees, which means that you can have your wife, for instance, you can have your children, you can have your brother or sister, depending on you, in that order. And that will be honored by the banking system in terms of an untimely, unfortunate demise of the bank account holder. So all these laws, the changes were overdue, and this addresses the weaknesses in the system and addresses the concerns of the depositors in general.
So several changes there, Mr. Phukan, ensuring transparency, accountability in the system. How crucial is it, especially in context of rebuilding public confidence in our financial institutions?
It's very, very important. In recent past, we have seen several cooperative banks actually struggling with financials, with their financial health. And that is the reason why the RBI had to impose certain curbs, which directly impacted the depositors. When the RBI actually names a particular bank or one or two banks and imposes restrictions on the amount of money that you can withdraw, for some people, it may be their entire life savings. And we've seen in states like Maharashtra, elsewhere, where people have suffered immensely. And this matter has been brought again and again. So I think to have a more streamlined procedure And stricter regulation for better financial health of cooperative banks is very, very important. It is by and large, you know, among the biggest banking sector at the bottom of the pyramid. Then the other part which Sir was mentioning, which is actually, it may seem a very small thing, but it's actually a very significant development of having multiple nominees. In the case of, say, elderly couple, where one person, the main account holder, passes away, normally it is the wife who is the nominee,
yeah,
who could be, you know, not very young. And before you realize, she could also pass away. And then it becomes a big hassle in terms of paperwork. And I can speak that from personal experience, from paperwork for children to actually lay claim to the money which is there in the account of the parent, which are parents. So in this case, if the children are already, I mean, up to four, you can have nominees, up to four nominees. Now there are regulations that, you can even have up to three people as joint account holders, moving beyond two. So these are very important user-friendly, people-friendly measures that it may seem small, but as Sir was saying, that suppose somebody who leaves without a will, but both the children are part of the account. So automatically the fact that two children have been nominated as account, so that sort of settles the issue of even legacy, inheritance. So these are important issues, look small, but have far-reaching consequences for common people.
You know, normally economic laws improve the ease of doing business, but this is one economic law that improves the ease of living. So I think that way it is a very, very significant piece of legislation that was passed by Parliament.
Okay. So, you know, when the bill was being discussed, I also heard some concerns which the opposition members raised, and particularly saying that it lacks digital age safeguards. It's very crucial in the contemporary times. How does the government seek to address all of these concerns? Because it's going to be important and it's going to be challenging in the times to come if, you know, there is any merit in these concerns.
Well, there's no doubt that in today's day and age, you need to have laws and safeguards that are digitally up to date. And the digital safeguards and the digital enforcement of the banking regulation is a responsibility that has to be to devolve on the financial regulator, which is the Reserve Bank of India. And there are many provisions in the law and also rules framed by Reserve Bank of India, which enforce that the digital aspects of this enforcement are taken care of.
Before we proceed to the other important bills, I'll also take your comment, Mr. Bhattacharya, on the finance bill, which was returned to the Lok Sabha on Thursday by the Rajya Sabha along with 35 government.
The first important thing to be noted is there was a time when we were young, we used to see that the budget for next year would get passed well into the year that has gone by, in a sense that they will be passed only by maybe by middle of May. Now, please remember that the current financial year has not yet ended and we have come close to passing the budget for next year before the financial year ends. So this is, to my mind, is something that is often not recognized, which has happened in the last few years. But the budget for next year is passed before the previous year ends, which means the money is in the hands of the different ministries, different arms of the government to spend during the full tenure of those 12 months. So that's number one. Number two, the budget itself had a very important provision in terms of an income tax relief, which gets introduced from 1st of April, which makes sure that anybody who is earning less than 12 lakh rupees taxable income, not including the standard deduction, he doesn't have to be taxed. And even if you are at a higher income level, you get certain benefits, which is fairly substantial. Now, this is an income tax benefit is seen to be a kind of a consumption booster. So it may and it should have, in the medium term, have some positive spin-off effect in terms of reviving demand in the economy, which will probably keep the growth engine revving. That's number one. And number two is this, that some of the 35 amendments, one of the amendments is a very key amendment, which addresses a major concern of some of our digital players. And you talked about digital entities who had levied kind of what is called a Google tax. You know, now that tax has been abolished. It has been abolished, but please remember that while the 6% levy has been abolished, now they have been subjected to the usual corporation tax laws of the country, which means that you don't have to deduct that 6% levy upfront, but you will be taxed by the prevailing economic laws in the country. So it is once again, as I said, that like the banking regulation law was the ease of living law, this one is the ease of doing business. That has been announced. And of course, there are many other the budgetary issues that has been resolved. There is a tax, the tariffs have been brought down. So all those things take effect once a finance bill is passed. Already the appropriation bills, which means that the money has been taken, withdrawn from the Consolidated Fund of India, that have been done. And this is a major kind of a day in the calendar, of economic calendar of any government. And that it has been passed in good time, August well, for the next financial year.
Okay, so after that elaborate conversation on ways and measures and the laws ensuring the financial well-being of the country, we'll move to talk about the security and safety of the country, Mr. Phukan. A much-needed bill in that aspect has been the Immigration and Foreigners Bill 2025. The government says it will modernize and consolidate India's immigration. The question is, how will this bill tackle illegal immigration into India?
So this bill actually seeks to look at certain acts in tandem. For example, the Foreigners Act, the Passport Act. Like there are four, the International Liabilities Carriage Act. So this is a bill, it's a very interesting bill, because the Home Minister who gave his speech in the Rajya Sabha, he said that it's welcome. India, see, there was a concern expressed by the opposition members that if India begins to track all the foreign nationals who come in, be they foreign students into universities or medical tourists. India is a very popular destination for affordable medical treatment. So will that have a negative impact? To which, of course, the Home Minister replied very categorically that we are welcoming foreign tourists in the medical tourism sector for academic purposes. Yet we are trying to, strengthen our regulation to see that in the name of these segments, unwanted people do not come in. So there are stricter punishment for people who uses a forged passport or forged visa. Certain institutions like academic institutions, hospitals, nursing homes, they have all been brought into the ambit where they're supposed to inform the authorities of any foreigner who have come in, so that the government is aware of who all have come in. And there is stricter punishment, including there are liabilities and responsibilities fixed on international carriers who bring in the tourists or foreign nationals. So in terms of monitoring of people who come in, it's a very important bill. It's a fine line between becoming a surveillance state and becoming an alert state, alert to people whom you want to welcome into the country and whom you don't want to welcome into the country. And I think to that extent, this bill is an important step in having better regulation by combining these, as I said, look at four laws, combine four acts, and takes a more holistic view on the regulations that are required for better monitoring and tracking system of foreign nationals coming into the country for different purposes.
Mr. Bhattacharya, while it's a significant welcome step towards curbing illegal immigration into India, how crucial is the bill also in checking drug cartels, the arms smugglers and others who pose not just physical threats but economic threats to the country?
The important phrase that you must keep in mind is that it is a bill that tries to curb illegal immigration.
Yeah.
Now, the illegal is the real operative word here. Now, you talked about drug cartel, you talked about traffickers. Now, those will probably be tackled as a result of this bill. So, nobody can probably have any second opinion on the fact that you need a country whose borders are safe and secure and which should not allow illegal immigration. And why in India is many other countries are also following the same principles of curbing illegal immigration. And please remember, even this law has got provisions, rules under it, by which if somebody is aggrieved for anything that is done that person or an entity because of action under the illegal immigration laws, there is a recourse to a legal kind of a trial. So it is not that it's a state wherein you cannot get heard. It's a piece of legislation, and it's a piece of legislation that has been passed by Parliament. So there is recourse to legal redressal as well. Whatever loopholes there used to be earlier that had been plugged, it makes the country more safe and secure for people who are legal residents of this country.
So, well, it's
the fact that, you know, even international carriers will also have responsibility.
Yeah.
You see, now what happens that somebody comes in, sneaks in, but with forged documents. So, you know, it's a failure at several levels, no? At the level of the immigration, at the level of the airline, the fact that you've come in. So now every level has a responsibility built into the system. So people will be more careful. Technically, you're supposed to do it even now. But I'm saying that even as the law exists today, even without these amendments, you're supposed to check that somebody who comes in on a genuine passport. Somebody who comes in for legal, rightful purposes into the country. You're not supposed to encourage an illegal immigrant or somebody who comes for something which is against the law of the country. But there are slips in between. So every law seeks to improve upon the existing law by identifying the loophole. So when you make certain segments who are part of that process of bringing in people, when you make them more responsible, it is sort of a built-in mechanism where you are also sort of fixing accountability. So,
right. So
an airline or a ship carrier or a cruise will be a little more sort of careful in who they are dealing with.
Right, so alertness, yeah. But at the same time,
there's also an element of economic freedom here, which probably we need to be conscious of. The economic freedom in terms of job opportunities. Nobody is questioning legal migration on work basis here. But if there is an illegal migration, which affects the economic freedom of the legal residents, that is something that any country will be worried about. So from an economic standpoint, this is a tool that can be used for ensuring more stable and effective economic freedom for those who are legal residents of this country.
Right, and that's the message that Home Minister Amit Shah sought to give through that very strong message when he spoke in the House, that if you contribute to the development of the nation, you're most welcome. But if you pose any threat to the national security, India is not a dharamshala, and that is where, you know, the law will take its course.
अप टू डेट लिखा जोका हर भारत में आने वाले विदेशी नागरिक का रखने का काम होगा ये मैं इस सदन को आश्वासन देना चाहता हूं राष्ट्रीय सुरक्षा या सार्वजनिक स्वास्थ्य के लिए खतरा पाया जाएगा उसको प्रवेश की अनुमति नहीं दी जाएगी माननीय देश धर्मशाला नहीं जो चाहे जिस उद्देश्य से चाहे यहां आकर रह जाएगा ऐसा नहीं होगा
So while this bill will make India an alert nation in terms of tracking who is entering the country, for how long are they staying, there is also another important bill which makes us alert to the climate disasters and our response to it. So we'll now talk about the Disaster Management Amendment Bill 2024, which amends the 2005 Act to enhance the functioning of the national and state disaster management authorities. Mr. Fukman? What are some of the significant changes that this bill is going to bring about?
Essentially, this empowers at the district level. Mm-hmm. Any law should empower the people dealing with the authorities at the immediate level, at the ground level. So the changes that it's not a drastically different bill from, I mean, it doesn't dramatically alter the structure. But what it does is that there are more functional autonomy given to the district level authorities when a disaster strikes, like the first responders to any disaster. And that is why this bill is a significant development in terms of quicker responses,
right.
You know, faster responses. It happens even now, but when it is already given, you know, the standard operating procedure has been given, what is to be done by at the district level, at the state level, and at the national level. So it's a more well-outlined system of sharing the responsibility and the response system. My understanding of the bill is that it has been designed to have a better, quicker response to any kind of disaster. Because I did attend the debate when it was being taken up in the Lok Sabha. At that point of time, I heard the Minister of State for Home Affairs, when he was introducing the bill, actually, Mr. Nityanand Rai, there were some oppositions because, you see, this is a tricky area.
Yes.
It also deals with states, and states feel that is the center through these amendments. Are they trying to take away essentially what is essentially a state subject? you know, if there is a disaster there, to what extent should the center intervene? But as we have seen from experience, no doubt that there will always be, the first response will have to come from the state or people on the ground. But if there is a standardized uniform response structure, what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to inform the state disaster management authority, what are the areas where the NDMA will come in. So it saves a lot of time. It saves a lot of lives as well. I think that's what is most important. It shouldn't be the case that there's a flood and you don't know what to do, whom to contact. So it's, I mean, it is there. So I think the center did try to allay these fears that, look, the state government will be the first responder in any case. And they will have to deal with the situation. But the idea is that at the district level, they are more empowered to deal with certain situations. And that is what this bill aims to do. Right. So,
in fact, what I liked from the government's response, and there's a very interesting line, Mr. Bhattacharya, that, you know, this legislation aims at bringing about a shift from reactive response to proactive risk reduction, and also beyond to an innovative and participatory approach, which takes along everyone. Even though it's a state subject, the center will be the first responder, it's the state. But at the same time, the role of the community will also be very,
very absolutely. I think it is not only proactive, but it also brings into play the important and critical role that the third tier of governance plays in disaster management. And I don't think this is a subject of center-state relations in that sense. I think what has been done through this legislation is laying down the rules, the protocol of how a disaster, whether it comes in the northern part of the country or the southern part of the country or the eastern or the western, the nature of the disaster and the havoc it causes and the harm it causes to people are probably the same. So therefore, they needed to be addressed with the same protocol and the same standards. So I think what the center this law is doing is laying down those protocol, those standards. I don't think the third tier of governance powers have been taken away. On the contrary, the third tier of governance and the second tier of governance, which is the state, their roles are being enunciated, outlined, and they are being empowered to take those steps under a broad national framework. Is something that we saw in the second half of our COVID management, wherein the center and the states were playing a complementary role in addressing that crisis.
Especially, you know, when India is prone to climate change related incidents, we need to have a roadmap in addressing these disasters. So we need to be proactive in our approach and we need to all work together. The next legislation that we will talk about is the Tribhuvan Sahakari University Bill 2025. The Lok Sabha passed this bill on Wednesday after an in-depth discussion led by Union Home Minister and Minister of Cooperation, Mr. Amit Shah. This legislation paves the way for the creation of India's first ever national cooperative university to be established at the Institute of Rural Management Anand in Gujarat. Now, this university is named after prominent cooperative leader Tribhuvan Das Patel, who played a pivotal role in the establishment of India's cooperative institutions. So let's listen in first to what the Home Minister said about why the university has been named after this leader.
और आपके दूध का व्यापार आप खुद बनाइए और वहां एक पहली छोटी सी एक गांव की कोऑपरेटिव बनी जिसमें 250 लीटर दूध एकत्रित होता था वहां से लेकर विश्व की सबसे मजबूत कोऑपरेटिव ब्रांड अमूल तक की यात्रा त्रिभुवनदास पटेल ने त्रिभुवनदास सरदार पटेल जैसे महान नेता के सानिध्य में रहकर भारत के अंदर सहकारिता की नींव डालने वाले व्यक्तियों में से एक माननीय और आज जो गुजरात राज्य सहकारी दूध विपणन संघ GCMMF जो बना है जिसको अमूल के बहुत छोटे से नाम से हम जानते हैं वो त्रिभुवन दास जी का विचार का देन है.
Mr. Bhattacharya, your response to this bill, especially tell us about how significant is this move towards empowering the youth in the cooperative sector?
Well, you know, we have to recognize that cooperatives as an instrument, as an economic agent, is a way how you make any economic activity more participative and wherein the shareholding takes place in a far more democratic way. This is not a capitalistic enterprise. This is a cooperative enterprise wherein you saw how the cooperative sector in various areas, whether it is the dairy or whether it is even the banking, they actually has helped the country address concerns in a more equitable way, economic concerns in a more equitable way. So I think this university, named after a person who inspired and encouraged and incentivized the growth of the cooperative dairy sector in this country, is something that will probably enhance the role and make cooperative education a better instrument for achieving higher growth and development in this country. So I would say we need not just one such university, we need such universities in different parts of the country.
Especially when, Mr. Fukur, the youth are the biggest drivers of change, of development that we want to see by 2047. How significant is it towards skilling the youth in the cooperative sector, at the same time bolstering the cooperative sector, ensuring sustainable growth and generating employment?
So, you know, interesting, just to take off from what Bhattacharya sir was saying, I was listening to the debate when it was happening in the House. So it was interesting. There were some members from the opposition who said, why not? This is going to be set up in Gujarat's Anand.
Yes.
We all know for, Anand is famous for Amul. So there were these views that they said, why don't you name after Varghese Kurien, the man who really revolutionized Amul? So the Home Minister then said that not many know perhaps that, but it was Tribhuvan Das Keshibhai Patel who had actually identified and Mr. Kurien and gave him, it was he who had brought Mr. Kurien, who eventually, together revolutionized the dairy sector. This university is supposed to actually skill people in the cooperative sector. And this is a niche area. It's different, as Sir was saying. It's different from a corporate sector. The requirements are different. The cooperative sector is different. The shareholding pattern, the ownership pattern, functional autonomy, the way they function, the decision making, everything is different. You don't have board of, you will have a board, but it's not a typically corporate structure of board of directors or a managing director. So there is a different way. It's more democratic way of functioning. So decision making will have to take into account the structure of cooperatives and how they function and deliver. So it is important in that context that people know how the sector functions and add to that. They learn that and then they add to that knowledge.
Absolutely.
So it creates a base for such people, for resource, knowledge resources. I don't know what they would be called. They would not be MBAs, but obviously they would be people who would be mastering the cooperative sector. It's very prevalent, especially in West India, Western India, Maharashtra, Gujarat. So the cooperative movement is important. You need how it functions. In fact, if I recall, I think he also mentioned that there are sectors where things like Sahakari Taxi,
yes,
on the lines of Uber and Ola can also take place. Instead of our youth driving for cab aggregators based elsewhere, they can create a society and operate on their own.
You're right. One idea leads to another, and something which benefits, the working class, the youth of this country, nothing like it. So we hope there will be more such measures in the times to come. But time allows us to take up only that much on this discussion. Thank you once again to
Thank
both
you.
Of you for sharing your thoughts with us and our listeners. Thank you.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on This Week in Parliament. The participants were Ashok K. Bhattacharya, economic analyst, and Sandeep Phukan, political analyst. The moderator was Tina Jha, journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnstalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.